You're too damn white, guys.
We're back.
Back from vacation.
Vacation is over. I actually didn't have a vacation, so I feel a little ridiculous saying that. You were the only one on vacay, my friend. I was busting the entire time. So I hope you vacayed for me.
I did, yeah. But traveling with a baby, it's not necessarily that restful, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah, we went to England and went to France for a day. Just in the tunnel, which was really cool. Actually, the tunnel under the English Channel. It's about like 20 miles or something like that. Yeah, yeah, super. Actually, I think it's, 160 miles per hour, 180. So it's not super, super fast, but it's pretty fast for a train, yeah. Then went to Denmark and Norway and brought back some reindeer and whale sausage. It's the first time I've ever eaten whale. I felt a little bad because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a marine biologist and study whales because I really liked whales. But yeah, I think
you got to
eat. Well, I think you got to eat one of every animal. It's like the Noah's Ark of food. It's sort of my goal in life is to eat one of every animal.
This is like my diversity diet I was on last year. You remember that?
Yeah, exactly.
I just eat whatever's edible.
Yeah.
Reindeer sausage. Your children everywhere are mortified.
Yeah, it's a little gamey. The whale pretty much tastes like beef, though. They do eat whale in Norway and Japan, possibly Iceland, but those are basically the only countries. It's minke whale, so they're not super endangered or anything like that. But yeah, still, I was a little dubious about it, but very small amounts of whale, I suppose. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, you're very brave globetrotting like that with a one-year-old. You're a bigger man than I am. We took our kids to Estonia 2 years ago, and that was the last big trip we did with our kids because we were like, you know what, this is just... They were like two and four at the time, and it was still really hard. So I don't know how you did it. You made it. You made it through your vacay alive.
Yeah, I love Denmark. I wanted to go to Hamlet's Castle, Elsinore, but it was raining, so I didn't get to go there. But Copenhagen is super nice, and Norway is the best. I mean, I love Norway. It's awesome. It's so beautiful, and the people are super nice. I mean... that's the place that Trump wants all the immigrants to come from. You know, he says, basically, why don't the Norwegians come over here? But the reason is because Norway's freaking nice. That's why.
Yeah. I guess that makes Trump a Nordicist.
He totally is, yeah. translation,
which is funny.
White people, basically, yeah.
Well, no, but Nordicism is much different than white supremacy. It is, like, specific to the Nordic region.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's a really good book called The Almost Nearly Perfect People that I read recently, which is awesome, and it's just about the four Nordic countries. I mean, they're always rated the happiest places on the planet, and you can tell why. I mean, it's such great social cohesion, really great social services. Everything works well. Everything's efficient. They have really high incomes, but, of course, everything's expensive, and they're taxed very heavily as well. We could do a whole episode on the Nordic system and how it good.
That's
but
true.
I mean, it comes with some drawbacks as well, but yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, I also feel like climate has an effect there. Like when you look at really, really cold places, I feel like people there are just generally, you know, more laid back about stuff. Like compared to LA, for example, like everybody's just real. It's funny. You'd think people in LA would be really laid back because they just have perfect weather all the time. But I find that you know, having lived in LA for so long, it just made me like more, I don't know, bummed out when I didn't have perfect weather or something.
Well, it was raining almost the whole time there, and it rains there a lot, which was, for me, almost a nice change, because in LA, it's always 80 degrees and sunny, which people would get mad at me complaining about, but I kind of like a little bit of rain every now and then. It was really nice, actually. Oslo is the mecca of exploration. I mean, there was like four major themes that I wrote about in my exploration book, which is coming out in November, plug, plug. That I got to see in Oslo. So that was really cool. Yeah, I mean,
interesting.
Just beautiful. Oh, we climbed to this rock, Pulpit Rock, it's called, this cliff basically that's 2,000 feet over a fjord. And you have to go up this massive long trail to get to. It's like the longest stairway in the world. I think it's equivalent of like 300 floors or something ridiculous that you have to climb the stairs up and down. But it's just super beautiful. Yeah. And the funny thing is,
I guess you didn't take the stroller that day.
Did not take the baby that day.
Oh, you didn't take the baby?
No,
you had a like Nordic babysitter or something?
Left her in daycare. No, we were on a cruise, so he could leave her with the babysitting that day. Yeah, no, I couldn't. Actually, one couple did take a baby, which seemed very masochistic. But the funny thing about Norway is it's land. It's not really islands, but it's connected by fairies because it's so incest or what do you call it? Recessed. Recessed the coastline. Not incest.
I hope it's not incest.
The coastline is so recessed with different fjords, right? So you have two cities that are really close to each other, but they're only connected by ferry just because you can't drive. It would take like a day to drive all the way around the fjords.
Right.
So Norway has one of the longest coastlines of any country in the world. Its coastline would stretch three times around the planet at the equator. And it has a coastline much longer than the U.S. East Coast, even though it's, I don't know, smaller than New York State or something like that. Yeah.
That is crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Super crazy long coastline. So they're all sailors and stuff. I think this is why. I mean, they had small patches of land separated by mountains. And then they had to get around on boats. And I think this is why they became Vikings.
Right? Vikings, I was just going to say, yeah.
Well, yeah, this is it, right? They had like small land holdings of farms in like really soggy climates, but they're awesome at sailing. So they're like, our farms are pretty small, but we're really good with the boats. So let's just go steal other people's farms, basically.
Yeah.
That's Vikings, yeah. Right? So that's why they became Vikings, right. I think.
That is fascinating, the Vikings. Well, my vacay was non-existent, as I mentioned. I've basically just spent this whole month on a rabbit hole with my house, which is still, I guess I'm in month 11 of dealing with this water damage. It is just never ending. It's crazy. But on the bright side, my house is going to be pretty much like 80% new by the time it's done. So that'll be nice.
Are you putting carpet downstairs or?
We are going to put carpet in the basement. Yeah, we have hardwood throughout.
Might flood again. You might want to consider tiles.
This is actually, this street that I'm on here is actually one of the only houses in this area that has not been touched by, or one of the only streets in this area that hasn't been touched by waters or floods of any kind because it's so high up. So it's a plus, but it's also...
You're quite close to a creek, aren't you? It's the creek that something to do with the Trail of Tears or something like that. Am I getting mixed up?
We're close. I grew up right in the middle of what was the Trail of Tears, but now the house that we have is not anywhere near that. We are near a river, though. We get lots of brown recluse spiders, and we have like wild deer and turkeys and stuff in our neighborhood. So, lots of wildlife, but it's beautiful. But it does come with some wildlife back here. It's interesting.
Yum, wildlife to eat.
Gonna go hunt a Thanksgiving turkey in my front yard.
Or a Thanksgiving spider.
I wonder how many spiders you'd have to eat to get enough protein for a day.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of the world, actually, people eat insects and spiders, arachnids, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scorpions.
I would do it.
Good eating.
I'd do it. I'd eat a scorpion. Wouldn't think twice, unless it was alive. Then I would think twice. Well, it feels really good to be back. I'm so glad we're doing this. I missed this ritual. I was kind of hoping we'd be able to get some episodes up during the break, without you, Andrew, but the, you know, this house stuff is just literally, I haven't had any time for work. I feel like I have had a vacation, only I've been working on things that aren't technically work. So it's been exhausting, but here we are. We're back to it. And it feels great. Feels so great. We do have a couple things we're going to talk about. Today's going to be a pretty laid back episode. We're getting back into the swing of things, but we do have some stuff that's happened since our break that we do want to talk about. So, Andrew, I remember you said you had something that you wanted to get into that was interesting. What was that?
Well, so I went to Norway and they have the Nobel Peace Prize Museum. And a few years ago, I went to Stockholm where Alfred Nobel is from and they have a Nobel Prize Museum there as well. So you can go to Scandinavia to see all the Nobel Prizes. But probably the most important event in human history happened yesterday, which is the giving out of the Ig Nobel Prizes.
What is that?
So it's an annual event, actually, where they give out prizes for the strangest research topics.
Oh, we've talked about the Ig Nobel Prizes. That's why it sounds familiar.
Yeah, we've talked about them. This is highly, highly important research that we're going to talk about today. We're going to go through some of the highly critical research that's being done around the world.
You might hear some phlegm while I'm laughing today because I am getting over a little bit of a cough. So I apologize in advance, but that is really funny. Let's hear it. What's this groundbreaking research?
All right, so for medicine, it turns out that pizza is actually good at preventing cancer, prostate cancer specifically.
But wait,
only
is this
if it's
serious?
Consumed, Yeah, but only if it's consumed in Italy.
Okay, so I'm thinking the things that come to the top of my head right off the bat are like water supply. Maybe they have better water or something like that. Because you hear people saying that about New York pizza. It's like all the water, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, I don't think that they know the reason, but I kind of suspect it has something to do with just the lifestyle and kind of stress or something like that. Like, the thing is, it's hard to deconflate those two things, but it's probably something to do with the lifestyle or a combination of the lifestyle and, you know, how good the pizza is. Oh, mamma mia, this is so good. It must, like, keep you healthy in some way, right? It's like a placebo effect kind of thing. I'm gonna pretend you didn't just say
mamma mia.
I think it's also a really weak effect. So it's measurable maybe, but it's not like eating lots of pizza. You should go out and buy lots of pizza and you're going to not have cancer. You probably will.
That is interesting. I'd like to see a study done on the effects of cancer on drinking wine in Italy versus other places.
Yeah. No, I mean, people go back and forth on this. Resveratrol. I guess that's heart disease. So I think the research is that like a little bit of wine, especially red wine, is actually good for preventing heart disease, declogging arteries and stuff like that, keeping your cardiovascular system healthy. But a recent research, I think, also says that alcohol does have an effect on cancer, makes cancer a little bit more likely. So, I mean, I think drinking in moderation is not terrible, but it's, I don't, on balance, I don't think alcohol is ever good for you, except maybe it's fun, so we should do it anyway.
Yeah. There's this book I'm reading right now. And when I say I'm reading it, I mean, I've been reading it for about 2 or 3 months and I haven't finished it. So I'm not sure if I'm actually actively reading it or not, but it is interesting. What is it called?
Is that my book?
your book is amongst the books I'm reading, but I will actually probably finish yours, which, by the way, a second plug for your book on this podcast. I'm only on chapter 4, I think, of your book so far, but it is, I just want to tell everybody listening, when this book is out, you have got to go check it out because this book is, it is a work of art. Andrew, you should be very proud of yourself. This is an amazing book.
Thanks. Yeah. High praise.
Been reading this book. It's This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. It's about alcohol. And basically this person, this book is basically, they're out to tell you should never drink alcohol ever again because they're basically saying exactly what you said, that it's just, it's never good for you.
Right. And I think you should just, unbalanced is probably true. Yeah.
Yeah. Although there is research that has been done recently that proves that drinking a single beer is healthier than drinking a single Coca-Cola or Pepsi or something like that.
Oh, probably. Yeah, absolutely. Because sugar is bad for you in general. So, I mean, the thing is like, yeah, all these things are a little bit bad for you, but, you know, you got to live, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, if you enjoy it, then do it, you know.
The interesting thing is that statistic flips on its head if you drink more beer. The Coca-Cola or the soft drink becomes healthier for you. The more you drink, the soft drink becomes healthier and the beer becomes more toxic. But if you're just having one, the beer is better for you.
Yeah. Well, they used to recommend in Bavaria at least 2 beers per day for pregnant women because it contains all the right vitamins and stuff like that, which doesn't really. But yeah, that was just like the German beer laws were trying to encourage drinking.
Yeah.
Those times have changed.
I remember the first time I went to Germany and I was like just astounded that there were just people walking around drinking beer on the street and just sitting down on the sidewalk drinking a beer.
Copenhagen in Norway. Oh, yeah. So in Norway, I got an ass beer.
Ass beer. I saw your tweet about this. What was that?
Yeah. They have a brand of beer and it was in the store and I was just like, I got to get this. And it was called ass beer.
Did it taste like ass?
No, it tastes pretty good. But apparently the ass is pronounced differently. The double A is A-A-S-S. So it's ass with an extra A. But apparently that's pronounced like oss or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it definitely looked suspiciously like ass beer.
So was that it for the crazy important research? Or was that the only one?
No, another one? We're just getting started, my friends.
Oh, no.
So the Ig Nobel Prize for Anatomy went to very valuable research on thermal asymmetry of the human scrotum.
Huh. What was this done for?
So, why do you ask that question? Researchers
never done for something.
They wanted to find out whether the right side and the left side experience different temperatures.
What do you mean? Like they maintain different temperatures?
So if they end up at different temperatures, like if they get warm differently. So they put probes on the scrotums of postal workers in France, and they were measuring if the temperature, if one gets hotter than the other, you know?
You're talking about scrotums between people or different parts of the same scrotum?
Different parts of the same scrotum, the left ball, the right ball.
Why would that, who does this research? Who has time like this? What was the point of this study?
Does science have to have a point?
Yes.
It's science for science because science.
I want to know how much money went into this research. So this scrotum research.
I think that you could argue that, I mean, temperature of the scrotum obviously affects sperm production and things like that. So there are valuable uses of this research, actually.
That's true.
It's not, yeah. It just kind of sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the archives of oral biology, there was a study that tried to estimate the total saliva volume produced per day in 5-year-old children. So they measured the saliva output of 5-year-olds, basically. So they collected all the saliva during a day.
This one seems useful. This one seems useful.
How is that useful?
Saliva is, it's the first stage of digestion. It's also like, doesn't it make up some mucus, which also kind of like helps excrete like nasty stuff that your body doesn't want, like through snot and sneezing and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure it. No, obviously, saliva plays a useful role. I don't know that there's any. I mean, again, it's because science.
Hey, at least I'm not defending scrotum research, my friend.
To me, the scrotum research sounds more useful. But
scrotum probes. I'm starting a scrotum probe business. Come buy my scrotum probes. That's the title of this episode. Come buy my scrotum probes.
So the next one is there was an invention, an apparatus was built in order to basically a car wash for babies. So you didn't have to change your diaper. You could just put them in the car wash. So they were testing different configurations of basically like a car seat in a glass box with sprayers that would kind of wash the baby so you don't have to change it. Seems that one seems useful.
Well, it doesn't seem as useful. It seems a lot more wasteful and counterproductive than the Chinese version of potty training and stuff like that, which is way cleaner.
Well, you can recycle the water. Yeah.
Yeah, the Chinese, you know what the Chinese do, right? When they don't ever use diapers.
Oh, really? What do they do?
They literally, if they're in public and their baby starts pooping or peeing, they'll just hold it over a trash can or over some dirt or something like that, and they'll just let it do it. It doesn't wear diapers.
So this is what people must have done in the past. I often think about this. What would you do if you were a Neanderthal or whatever, you were an early human without diapers? Like, because remember, for most of human existence, we didn't have diapers. So what would you do? The baby starts pooping and you're just like, yeah, you would just like hold it somewhere, right?
And
like,
hope it doesn't
poop on your bed.
It's just pooping.
Basically. It's pooping. Let's hold it away from the food, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only standard. Keep it away from the edibles.
Pretty much. I think that's
how I wonder how they wipe. How do they clean up in that situation, though? Like, they're not, you know, they don't have this
crazy.
Yeah, grab
some leaves, man. It's like pooping in the woods.
Get a corn cob. My grandfather has a farm that he's lived on for decades, and he actually had an outhouse on this farm at one point. He's been on there so long. It's crazy to think, like, we're not that far away from not having toilets in history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we're not that far away from anything. I mean, we've only been modern for 200 years, depending on how you measure it. Could be less.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. It's an infinitesimal part of time that we live in where we're modern and have all this technology. Most of our predecessors had nothing.
Yeah. I guess by that logic, we're not that far from amphibians.
That's true definitely on a cosmic time frame scale. I mean, all life on Earth is a very short time in the history of the cosmos. Yeah. But I mean, it's a lot longer since we've had amphibians, like 250 million years, than humans have been around or had technology, for example. Yeah.
True. Yeah.
So another study looked at, I guess this was the economics prize, perhaps. Another study looked at which country has the filthiest money. Or specifically, which money from a country sustained bacteria colonies the best?
Huh? Is this like they gauge the different materials used or something or what?
Yeah. Essentially, yeah. So they took money, they inoculated the money with bacteria, and then followed the same process of wetting them and drying them and stuff like that, and then measured the bacteria colony survival on the money.
Interesting. So which had the dirtiest?
Dollars, British pounds, euros, Romanian currency. It's called leu. I don't even know how to pronounce it. L-E-U. Romanian leu had the most money. So don't go to Romania. Or if you do and touch the money, wash your hands.
Yeah, I touch my hands even when I touch. I wash my hands even when I touch, any kind of money because I'm not a germaphobe, but it's dirty.
There's something like most U.S. $100 bills are laced with cocaine, something like that.
I've heard this. It's really funny.
I don't know if that's true or not. The internet said it, so it must be true, but...
It must be true.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is hilarious. Ignoble prizes. Let's do one more.
I got two more.
You got two more? All right, let's do them both.
Two more. Psychology prize was for what is the most pleasurable part of your body to scratch?
That one's interesting.
So it's pretty subjective, though. So the back. If you're just scratching for kind of no reason, like if you have an itch, so there's two questions. One is if you have an itch and are trying to scratch it, that one I think is the ankle, actually. So if it's like an induced itch, but like a plant, or like if you have poison ivy or something like that, the ankle is actually the most pleasurable place to scratch. But if it's just sort of general random scratching for the sheer pleasure of it, then it turns out that the back is the most effective spot. And I think that's why they have those back scratchers. You ever tried one of those? Those are pretty awesome.
Those are pretty great. I like them. I'm a fan.
My daughter
Nora said one day, she said to me, she was like four when she said this. She said, "Daddy, when I'm a grown up, I want to invent a robot chair that scratches my back and feeds me snacks and lets me watch TV at the same time." And I was like, I was kind of shocked at first. And then I just said, "You'll probably get the chance to do that."
Yeah, well, that's the future, right? Wall-E. That's in Wall-E, that movie.
Well, it's Aldous Huxley first, Brave New World. Yeah, those big scrubby chairs.
Yeah,
big scrubby. Oh, yeah, what do they call those? Yeah. The tubies or something they call it? I can't remember what they call it.
Really? Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Something. I can't remember. That's a great book. I love that book.
Last is in the Journal of Fluid Dynamics. 71st annual meeting of the APS Division of Fluid Dynamics is, why do wombats have square poop?
Wombats have square poop? Hold the phone. This is going too fast.
Apparently. Cubes. I didn't even realize this. This is like a huge revelation for me. I had no idea. I've lived... most of my life so far, realizing that wombats have square poop. Cubic, I suppose you would say, in three dimensions.
What does that mean? Their buttholes are square or something? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know if it's a cube passing through a cylinder
I've got a theory. Tell me if I'm wrong. I've got a theory. Yeah. I'm going to guess wombats eat really... I'm going to guess they eat a ton of roughage and, like, really hard, brittle stuff. And then their digestion process, just like the poop ends up being like these little tiny hard cubes because they're eating like really rough foods, maybe.
No.
Okay. All right. That was my
shot.
It's a
good hypothesis, but it turns out that the intestines of the wombat are preferentially stressing different size. So it starts out, get ready for it, as a sphere, but then the intestines are the muscles of the intestines are arranged in such a way in such a way that it squeezes them harder on one side than it does on the other, and it ends up forming a cube. So it really is not a cylinder tube that we're talking about. We're talking more about like a squarish tube.
So they have like a trash compactor in their butt.
Well, we all do, but they have a square one.
Well. Yeah, I guess that's true. Well, that's what I mean. Is like you don't ever see like a trash compactor that crushes stuff into a cylinder, right? It's always a cube. So it's like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everybody's poop is like, when it's healthy, it's like, it's together compacted. And not loose. Yeah. This is a great conversation, by the way. But what I'm saying is it seems like these wombats have like a literal compactor, like in Star Wars, where they're...
That made me think of two. No, it's the first one. It's A New Hope.
The first one, New Hope. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is fascinating. Square poop. I want to have square poop. I want a trash compactor in my ass.
There could be an invention for that. It's an attachment.
It's an accessory.
Extender.
You have to stick this square thing up your butt, and it funnels extender all your. This is gross. We gotta stop.
That'd be popular. Sell it on Amazon.
We have reached new lows. We have reached new lows.
Now, Julian, all this is very important research.
It's interesting. I mean, I feel a little bit smarter. I mean, those are five solid conversation openers right there.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise. I was kind of shocked this week. I don't know if you've been paying attention or how much, but all this scare around vaping the last couple of weeks is really interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't avoid it, I feel like. I feel like everybody's talking about it.
Especially the flavor. So even Trump, I guess, who's anti-regulation, is talking about restricting or banning flavors on vaping, right? And I've seen a lot of ads recently, actually, about like smoking kills kids and all this kind of stuff. Because I gather that, you know, cigarettes have obviously pretty much declined to the point where not that many people use them anymore. But
right,
vaping is big, I guess, with kids. I don't know. Is it?
Yeah,
that's
the scariest part to me is these kids, because their lungs are still developing. And I have no doubt that some of these kids probably are having their lungs collapse from vaporizing. But there's a legal age to do it, you know?
Well, yeah, but I mean, kids do it before the legal age, obviously, all the time.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It is, but yeah, well, the thing about it is, it's like the marijuana thing too. So it used to be like a cigarette was a cigarette, right? But I guess what I gather is vaping, you can have like a single vape dispenser or whatever it is, equivalent to like a whole pack of cigarettes or something like that. So they're actually ingesting far, far more nicotine than they would get through cigarettes. Is that accurate?
It can be. It obviously depends on people's. I've done a lot of research on this. You know, I'm not an expert by any means, but I've read a lot of the studies that these experts are talking about. Because I never really buy headlines in the media. Whenever I see a story like this, I always want to read more about. I'll read the full studies sometimes and just draw my own conclusions from those. But the interesting thing is that, first of all, you know, these nicotine juices that you put in these e-cigarettes, they all come rated at different milligrams of intensity for nicotine content. So, like, it goes all the way from, like, zero nicotine to, I think, like, 65 milligrams or something. But what's interesting is only, like, 50% roughly of the nicotine makes it into the vapor when it's vaporized. So, you're not getting all of that nicotine content that's displayed on the label in your lungs. You're getting about half of it. And B, there's about 10 to 15 milligrams of nicotine per cigarette, like if you're just smoking a traditional cigarette.
Right.
But obviously that cigarette's burning and there's a lot of it's just wasted into the air. So you're not getting all that,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So with vaporizing, it's really tricky because there's no real hard science on exactly like how much vapor equals a cigarette, but there is like, we are learning more. And apparently, there are some rough metrics that can be known about it. Like that I read a study today just before this recording that said that roughly 15 draws from an e-cigarette will equal one cigarette.
Right. 15. So it's the opposite. What you're saying is that there's a lot less than an e-cigarette.
That's what this research suggests. Now, here's the other thing. I'm highly skeptical of a lot of this because vaping's pretty new. I think it's like 2006 or something, like pretty... it's pretty new, so, and I feel it took us decades to figure out the negative effects of smoking cigarettes. But at the same time, vaping doesn't really, vapor juice doesn't contain a lot of the carcinogens and stuff that tobacco does, because it's just the nicotine. There's like 30 other toxins and stuff in the tobacco when you smoke it. And another thing to consider is when you're vaporizing it, you're not combusting anything. You're warming it up to a point where it turns into vapor, and then you inhale that. So if there's no combustion, there's a lot of these contaminants aren't in, a lot of the contaminants that are in cigarettes aren't in the vapor juice. So, and also, here's the biggest kicker. This to me, when I read this, this shocked me because I had no idea that these numbers even existed, first of all. But there's only been 6 deaths from vaping e-cigarettes in the entire history of e-cigarettes. Six deaths.
Well, would that include things like cancer down the road? Like, as you say, a lot of these effects are long-term effects, right? So you're not going to die. Yeah. You're not going to drop dead after smoking a cigarette. But, you know, if you smoke packs and packs of them for years, you're going to die from lung cancer. So I don't think that would be even included yet, given the, you know.
I agree. But the point of bringing that up is that these headlines are saying that they're demonizing these e-cigarettes and saying that these teens are, you know, there's this one story of this kid, Chance Amorato. I think I'm saying that right. Let me see. Chance Amorati? What is it? I'm looking at it here. Chance Amorata. I think that's how you say it. Anyways, Chance Amorata. This kid, he's gone viral and is now like, he's blowing up on Instagram and stuff because he's made this huge beef about his lung collapsing and he's blaming it on his Juul, the little e-cigarette that's popular. And he's blaming it on that, but he only vaped it for like a year and change. So there, he's getting all this flack now, even though he's going viral. There's a lot of flack from people saying like, hey, I've been vaping for like 10 years and I've not ever had a lung collapse. And I was a smoker before that and I felt way worse and I feel better on the vapor than I do on cigarettes. And obviously like it's still nicotine. You're still addicted to something. But like point being, the media is making vaporizers to seem like they're, you know, killing people in like a year's time or something. And that's just sensational. That's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's sensationalism on both sides. Good people on both sides. But anyway,
totally.
But the other thing is though, I'm sure that, so cigarettes were known to be deadly, you know, a long time before it was sort of kind of commonly known or before it had these huge pushes to get it, regulations and stuff like that, and the labeling of the cigarette packages. And it's because there was huge lobbying and marketing done by cigarette companies. And I'm sure the same thing's going on with e-cigarettes. I mean, it's, you know, there's these companies whose bottom line is based on people buying this stuff. So they don't want it to seem deadly, right? It's the same thing with climate change, right? Like, what is it? Merchants of Doubt. There's a good book about this and how the same people who are lobbying for tobacco are now lobbying for the oil companies, basically, and they're trying to just obscure it. So all you need is, if you have 99% of the scientists saying, oh, climate change is real, you have 1%, a very vocal 1% of people saying, no, it's not real, these scientists are crazy. You know, it makes it seem like there's two sides to an argument when there really isn't. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's definitely going on. Like I do think probably it just makes sense that e-cigarettes would be a little bit less bad than cigarettes. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think that
it's still a substance.
Oh yeah. Which reminds me, like I don't know if nicotine's actually that deadly. But you know, like caffeine is deadly in large doses. I was looking at this website the other day where you can put in your body mass and the type of caffeine you're consuming, it can tell you what the deadly dose for caffeine is. And
I saw your tweet about this too.
Yeah, it's around 40 cups of coffee per day.
But, I enjoyed this tweet.
Yeah, but this is funny because I did this before, and then I actually realized I'd read about this guy Balzac, which is also kind of hilarious.
This is a name. Well, oh my gosh!
Yeah,
I'm losing it over here.
It's not Balzac, as people, I guess.
This is like that Dumas commercial from Mountain. I think it was Mountain Dew. Do you remember that commercial?
Yeah.
The name's Dumas.
Yeah, it was like, what was that? That was in a movie. Oh, that was in Shawshank Redemption. And
that was the original version
looking
of the joke.
The library,
yeah.
And he holds up the book and he's like, by Alexander Dumas. Dumas?
That was the original version. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dumas.
Yeah. Well, there's this famous French author named Henri Balzac, with a Z.
Every time.
Although it is kind of a giggle name, I suppose. I didn't even realize, honestly.
Wait, what's the guy's first name? I'm only hearing Balzac. What's his first name?
I think it's Henri. Henri.
Henri. He's an ornery Balzac.
Yeah, exactly. He consumed the equivalent, apparently, of 47 cups of coffee. So now he would have died if he drank 47 cups of water, to be clear. So what he was actually doing was just like chewing on caffeine and stuff like that. He was taking most of it in like a powdered, snuffy type of form. It wasn't just like straight up drinking coffee. And he'd drink like little espressos that were like six times as powerful as, you know, even an espresso today. So he was taking it in super concentrated form. But this is an example of like some of the most the largest concentration of caffeine dosage ever. And he did this for 25 years. Of course, he died from probably related things. So
yeah.
Not to say that, you know, but kind of crazy, right? Like, I don't know if he ever slept.
Do ball sacks ever sleep, though? I have never heard of a sleeping ball sack. The ball sack's always awake, isn't it?
Ball sack. I mean, it only sounds funny in English. It doesn't sound funny in French.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, the French language is too beautiful to be funny.
Yeah, it's like Aspire.
Aspire, exactly, yeah. But getting back to this Chase Amirata kid, what's interesting is, you know, his lung collapsed. That's why he was hospitalized. And it's unclear. The experts who are covering this are saying, you can read this on insider.com. There's this study that they quote, but the experts are saying it's not as simple as the media is making it. Obviously, hello, it's the media. But it's interesting because this kid, his lung collapsed and he went to the hospital and he blamed it on his Juul, but he's getting a bunch of flack because he apparently has this condition called spontaneous pneumothorax. It's a condition you're born with, and it basically guarantees that your lung will collapse at some point. I have two cousins with this condition, and both of their lungs have collapsed.
Yeah, how would, like, an e-cigarette cause your lung to collapse? It's going to maybe give you cancer, but it's not going to collapse your lungs. That's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, what is being suggested about this particular case with Chance Amirata is that he started using this Juul when he was 16. And when his lung collapsed, I don't even think he was 18 yet. And so he was going into this hospital and, you know, his lung collapsed and he told the doctors that, he thought it was his Juul. And so there's reason to believe that the doctor might have told him that the Juul made his lung collapse just because he was underage and wanted to deter the kid from smoking nicotine. There's a lot of nuance that there's not really any specifics on with this case, but it's just interesting. It's just another case of, like, you know, this kid, like, I'm not saying he's doing this, but, you know, he's become famous overnight for making this, for putting this story out there. And I definitely think people do that. I'm not saying he's doing it specifically because I don't know the situation, but plenty of people make themselves famous overnight for stuff like this. And, you know, who knows what the truth is?
Well, you know, I think he probably does believe it was a strong contributing factor. You say it was a year, which actually sounds to me like kind of a long time to be doing it. I mean, I understand that people do it for many years or decades, but even so, a year would definitely be enough to develop something like this if doing so could develop something like this. Yeah. I don't know one way. It seems far-fetched to me.
But what do you do about all the other people who've been vaporizing since 2006 and, like, they're fine?
Oh, I mean, that doesn't prove anything. I mean, you could have different effects on, like, maybe he had this condition, spontaneous pneumothorax, which kind of just means, like, collapsed, spontaneous lung collapsing, right? But actually, pneumothorax is just the area that your lung is in. So maybe it made the condition worse or something like that, or triggered it. Like, just because plenty of people are fine and some people have an adverse reaction doesn't mean that it's safe. But at the same point, your thing that only six people have died from it. I mean, if you're talking about acute symptoms of, you know, you just puff on it and you die, that seems like kind of bad. But at the same time, six people is infinitesimal part of the population. So, and probably even the population of smokers. So it's kind of like if you hear something
in the
news,
because the numbers on smoking are way different. The death numbers on smoking are like 500,000 a year or something like
absolutely. And I'm sure far more people have probably already died from cancer related to e-cigarettes than in these six acute cases, right? So the thing is, if you hear about something in the news, it's probably not worth worrying about because by definition, it's a low probability event because the news is interesting in different things, right? So, like, if it's kind of this thing that happens rarely and sensationalized, then it's probably not worth worrying about.
Yeah, that's how I feel. But it is interesting. It's all the rage right now. Everybody's talking about vaping. I will say that the flavored vapes, the flavored vape juice stuff seems kind of problematic, especially with these kids. Like, there is a 78% increase in underage nicotine intake since vaporizers have been introduced. Actually, no, specifically in the last couple of years. Not only since vaporizers, since these Juuls have been around. there's been a 78% increase in underage nicotine consumption. It's crazy.
Yeah.
That is insane. Especially since on the heels. Go ahead.
I have done hookah before, and, you know, it tastes good. Actually, it's kind of a fun social activity. So I'm sure it's a bit similar to that. I don't know if it's, I wouldn't want my kid to smoke. That's for sure. I mean, any type, but I don't know whether it probably does do something, this regulation, to prevent it. But again, also though, I kind of also think that people should make their own choices, and so it's a tough one.
Tough one. It's a toughie. This is, we've covered more ground than I thought we would on this first week, especially considering we did no preparation for this and we just kind of dove back in. So I feel like this was a strong welcome back episode. We didn't lose our vibe at all in our time off.
Well, there was lots of important research being done.
That's true. That's true. Not by us, by the Ig Nobel Prizes. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. It's so good to be back. We are looking forward to doing this again weekly. We are back on Monday release schedule. And hope to have you back next week. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And like I said, these are every Monday. Hope to have you back next week.
Thanks for listening.